Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome back once again to the Off the Wall podcast here on Blog Talk Radio and living all day long at yesnetwork.com. I am Chris Sheeran, a bit of the sniffles, as you could hear on my BPTV appearances during the past couple of days, especially yesterday. It was a tough one, but as my Halls cough drop, the rapper says, get back in there, champ, a little pep talk from the rapper, and here I am, getting back in there, and what a day to get back in here, I guess. Championship Monday, NCAA, Louisville, Michigan. And thank the good Lord, the Syracuse Orange have packed up and went home. Boy, can I not stand the Syracuse Orange or their fans or their coach. Can't stand them. And it wasn't a recent thing. This has been going on since the early 80s. My deep hatred of Syracuse, boy, I tell you, it runs deep. My ex-girlfriend didn't really help that matter too much. But boy, am I glad they are O-U-T. Out. And I can thank Mr. Beilein and his Michigan Wolverines for doing the trick. Getting them out. So it's Louisville against Michigan. Beilein. Former West Virginia head coach Rick Pitino, doesn't suck to be him. Let's face it. Horsey Owens won the Santa Anita Derby, you know, en route to the Kentucky Derby. Santa Anita Stakes, whatever. I'm not a horse racing guy, but his horse wins there, and his team basically at the same time gets into the national championship game. Good to be Rick Pitino right now. And regardless, you know, Michigan comes in, Big Ten team, but they have a Big East coach. Beilein, of course, is at West Virginia. So in my eyes, it's still an all Big East final. And three of the four coaches you had in the final four, Big East coaches. As we all know, that's going bye-bye. And that's sad. That's really sad. People who grew up, like I did, with the Ewing and the Georgetown, with the Mullen and Jackson and St. John's, Walter Berry, Willie Glass, Matt Brust, Sergio Luke. It's been tough being a St. John's fan. And see, that also heads into the Syracuse hatred. But, you know, it just seems like there's a different set of rules. You know, Fab Melo played the entire season last year. As I go off on a tangent, it happens when I'm caffeinated. But Fab Melo played every game last year. And then all of a sudden in March, he's academically ineligible. And it's not even the NCAA that takes him out. It's the university. Yet in September, 2 months before the season began for St. John's last year, the season was over. Three incoming freshmen, one of the top recruiting classes in the nation, thanks to my buddy Steve Lavin, the head coach over there. Amir Garrett, Jakar Sampson, who played ridiculously well this year, and center Norvell Pell, all ruled ineligible after the NCAA did not accept three classes that each of them took that summer at Northeast Prep in Philadelphia. Isn't that special? St. John's season is over before it starts. Syracuse got their big seeding and had a tremendous season with a kid who was probably ineligible the whole season long, but still got to get on the floor. And the NCAA didn't do anything. The university did. Constantly putting gas on the fire that is my hatred for anything orange. Anything. Maybe it's because my team has not been good since Meta World Peace. You remember him, Ron Artest? led them to the Elite Eight. They lost to Michael Redd in Ohio State. It's been a while. We're going to go on 14 years since we've had any kind of serious run in the tournament. Yeah, I'm pissed. I am. But moving on. Michigan and Louisville. Michigan has been to the final five times. They have one win. The Fab Five was there twice, losing both times. They got annihilated by Duke, 71-51 in 1992. 1993, they went back. That's not easy. Great team. They went back. And that was, of course, the famous timeout game with Chris Webber. They lost to North Carolina 77-71. They got a win, though, back in 1989. Steve Fisher beat, you may know him. He roams the sidelines now for the Brooklyn Nets. PJ Carlissimo's Seton Hall team, 80-79 in overtime. What a story that would have been for Carlissimo if they were able to pull that out. Would have been great. Louisville's been there twice, both under Denny Crum, 1980-1986. They won both times. 1986, they beat Duke, 72-69. 1980, beat UCLA 59-54. This year, they have Rick Pitino running the show. Louisville's second banana to the Kentucky Wildcats, who won the title last year in the state of Kentucky. Basically, the redheaded stepchild, it fits because they're red. The Cardinals. This should be, I think, in my estimation, you know, I saw Michigan firsthand at the Barclays Center for a holiday festival game, and I saw Beilein run practice, and it was a well-oiled machine. I understand Louisville is the top seed in this game. Top seed in the tournament. And I can't believe, after seeing what I saw with Michigan in practice and in their game at Barclays Center, I didn't have them going further than I did. I did have them in the Final Four, I just didn't have them in the final. Had two of the Final Four teams. I had Louisville and I had Michigan. Indiana spit the bit against Syracuse, ruining my entire bracket. Thank you very much, Hoosiers. Appreciate that. But it should be a great game tonight, and I would not be shocked, if the Wolverines are champions for the second time in the history of the championship game. Moving on, the New York Yankees yesterday got a big, big shot in the arm, figuratively and literally, from their ace, C.C. Sabathia. And as I was sitting here in my office preparing for yesterday's BP show, I knew he got off to slow starts. This much I knew with C.C., just by memory. But I said, you know, it doesn't take him long to start heating up. After all, he's the ace of the staff. So I did a little research. I put together a graphic. His five opening day starts for the New York Yankees since he's been in pinstripes in 2009. That was his first start on opening day. 0-2 with an ERA near 7.5. 22 earned runs in 26 and two-thirds innings pitched. 23 strikeouts and 16 walks. Opponents hitting .333 and hit two homers. And then I said to myself, self, what about the second game? What about the second start for C.C. Sabathia over his 4 years so far going into yesterday's outing against Justin Verlander and the Detroit Tigers, which at the time seemed to be an uphill battle, and the Yankees were without any climbing material. Got the patchwork lineup, going up against last year's Cy Young runner-up in Verlander, who just signed a lengthy extension to stay with the Tigers, and ridiculously unhittable at times. So CC's second start over his 5 years with the Yankees, as we tack on yesterday's brilliant 7-inning, 4-hit shutout performance, as opposed to 0-2 with a 7.43 ERA, he is 3-0 with an ERA just over 1. Think about that for a second. 5 opening day starts, 22 earned in 26 and 2/3. 5 second starts to the season. 4 earned runs in over 35 innings pitched. 29 Ks, 8 walks. Opponents, instead of hitting .333, hitting a measly .167. And the Yankees needed that desperately out of their ace yesterday. Can't even begin to tell you how much they needed that. They were staring down a 1-5 start, which hasn't happened to this franchise since 1989. And we all know what happened in 89 and 90, those back-to-back years. 74 wins followed up by 69 wins. So CC Sabathia comes in and does exactly what he needs to do. Shut a very potent Tiger offense down that had its way with Yankee pitching the first 2 games of the series. First 2 series of the season, Yankees were staring down sweeps at the hands of the Red Sox and the Tigers. More formidable against Detroit with Verlander on the mound, but they were able to get a win. And a 7-0 win over Verlander and company. And how about the worry for the Yankees that everybody was really losing sleep over? The new additions to the lineup. Are they going to hit? Is Euclid the same? I don't get the utter disdain for Kevin Euclid. I get it. He was a Red Sox. Get over it. Get over it. The guy's hitting .409. His on base is .480. He's got 9 hits. 5 are for extra bases, 4 doubles, and a home run. He's got 4 ribbies. That's second on the team. To Francisco Cervelli. He leads the team in ribbies with 5. Vernon Wells. He's batting .294. He's got 2 dingers. He's driven in 4. Got a double too. Who knew? Travis Hafner, oh, he's done. He's hitting .350. 7 hits, including a homer, 2 ribbies. Sure, he struck out 7 times, which is tops on the team. But his on base is still over .400. He's hitting .350. Now, you're probably out there saying, Chris, well, you can't say that because it's early. Well, if I can't say that because it's early, if I can't wax poetic about what these new guys have been able to do, then you can't sit there and tell me, oh, the Yankees are 2-4. Right. Right. 6 games. There's 156 left. Hiroki Kuroda only lasted an inning and a third, his shortest outing of his career. Because he got hit in the middle finger trying to catch a line drive. Reaction. Pitchers do it all the time. Thankfully for the Yankees, they didn't have to deal with another injury. And Kuroda just has a bruised middle finger. And he's making his start today as Cleveland opens up the Jake by the Lake for the 2013 season. Yankees get their first look at Nick Swisher, their former teammate, and, of course, Travis Hafner goes back to Cleveland after 10 years being an Indian in a Yankee uniform. You just got to relax. Baseball's not football. 2-4 in the NFL, yeah, you're in trouble. You could be in big-time trouble, especially with the schedule coming up. You could hit a really tough part of your schedule. And if you're 2-4, your season is toast. In baseball, it's not like that. And I know the Yankees are dealing with a lot of injuries. They are. But if they could continue to get pitching like they got yesterday, and I know it's not going to be shutouts every night, every day, but if they can get what they expect out of their starters and just manufacture some runs with this quote-unquote patchwork lineup and keep their heads above water, be 500 at the end of April before they start getting pieces back in May, like a Mark Teixeira, like a Curtis Granderson, like a Derek Jeter. They're going to be fine. How's Toronto doing? How's the all-world team doing? Six games through this. They're tied with the Yankees in the basement at 2-4. That's why we don't play these games on paper, people. R.A. Dickey's getting drilled. Drilled. He's their ace. Welcome to the American League East, my friend. You're not pitching to a Punch and Judy 7-8 hitter and then the pitcher in the 9 spot every night, every start. You got guys, for the most part, who could hit 1 through 9. 1 through 9. Hasn't been easy for Mr. Dickey so far this season. Just unbelievable how people can just give someone a world championship before they even step on the field is beyond me. Dickey's first start, April 2nd against the Indians, he went 6 innings, allowed 4 runs, 3 of them earned. Toronto loses 4-1. His last start, yesterday against Boston. Red Sox didn't get the memo about the Blue Jays being the best team in the American League East. Dickey's pitching to an 8.44 ERA. Struck out 9, walked 6. His whip is near 2. Didn't even last 5 innings against the Red Sox. Gave up 10 hits, 8 runs, 7 earned, 2 bombs. Struck out 5. 2-4. You know, I follow the Blue Jays Twitter feed all through the preseason, all through spring training. Love this team. Love this team. Yeah, it's early. I know. And it could turn around any second. But you don't win games on paper. It just doesn't happen. Yankees start a 4-game set with the Tribe today. Coverage on YES begins at 3:30, immediately following the Mike Francesa show here on YES. Mets was into that game yesterday, too. You know what? People are going to give them issues for celebrating the way they celebrated. Have you ever been involved in a game like that? In your life, at any level? I have. It's a battle. You scratch. You claw. You stay close. Your bullpen gets the job done. Keeps you in the game. And you're able to win it in the ninth. And I know Mr. Mushnick hates this term, but I'm going to use it. And you walk off and win. That's an impressive victory by the Mets. It's a young team. Let them celebrate. Let them jump around like they just won the pennant. I have no problem with it. None at all. When you battle the way they did yesterday, and you come back and you, I don't care if it's the Marlins. I don't care if it's a little league team they beat. The way they stayed in the game and came back and won in the ninth, you're allowed to celebrate like that. And good for Marlon Byrd. Getting the game winner. Chasing home Tejada and Nieuwenhuis. And getting the Mets a scrappy win. And one that maybe gives them a little bit of oomph as they hit the road. Now the New York Knicks. As we round out this podcast today. First time since 99-2000 that they have 50 wins. Carmelo Anthony still playing out of his mind. A 125-120 victory over the Oklahoma City Thunder. Melo, 36 points. Unbelievable performance once again. Averaging 41.3 over his last four games since dropping 50 against the Heat. He's gone 50, 40, 41, 36. Knicks have won 12 straight. They are setting themselves up beautifully heading towards the postseason. They're, as we speak right now, 2.5 games. 2.5 games above the Pacers in the Eastern Conference for that number 2 seed. And that's big. That is big. Because if they get there, and they're able to advance past those first two rounds, they will not see the Heat until the Eastern Conference Finals. And that's huge. 2 weeks ago, I didn't think anyone was going to beat the Miami Heat. I didn't. I'll be honest. In my heart of hearts, do I still think anyone could beat them? I don't think so. But I do know this. If they do meet the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals, it's not going to be a sweep. It's not going to be in 5. It might not even be in 6. I think the Knicks match up very well against the Heat. They won the season series 3-1. I know that last game was an aberration. LeBron, D-Wade, and Mario Chalmers didn't play. I get that. The first two wins, though, over the Heat, everyone was accounted for. And the next Knicks didn't just beat them. They beat them by 20. Both times. Here's where the Knicks are going to run into problems, and I saw it yesterday in their game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And you have to understand something. I was watching the Knicks, the Yankees, and the Mets all at the same time. But mainly I was on the Knicks because the Yankees were up big. The Mets we were keeping an eye on because it was close, and we wanted to see how that went down. And the kid Fernandez was pitching in his major league debut, the Cuban defector for the Marlins, throwing gas. Went 5 innings, allowed 1 run on 3 hits. Decker was the only one who got to him, drove the run in on a double into the left field corner. But where the Knicks are going to run into problems, this is my thought process, okay? Early in the season, a caller called into Mad Dog Radio, which I am a fervent listener of. I don't know if that's proper English. We don't end things on propositions, sentences on propositions, prepositions, whatever. I'm so stupid right now, hopped up on medication. Anyway, getting back to my Nick point. I put a magnifying glass over this yesterday with my cousin watching the game with me, and he agreed 100%. It is fun watching this team. They are playing absolutely unbelievably out of their minds right now, and it's a lot of fun. They have 50 wins. Anybody who wants to talk down about the Knicks, even before they were on this 12-game winning streak, you're nuts. You're crazy. I would sign for this year with that 4-game losing streak on that West Coast trip in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. Because this year has been better than the past 10 years exponentially. At least when they take the floor, you think they have a chance to win. You couldn't say that the past 10 years. It has been agonizing to watch this team. Not this year, though. They've been fun to watch. But here's the problem. Carmelo Anthony yesterday, and I know he's playing out of his mind, but this is some, he's won, he wants to bill himself. He's tied right now. He's the top scorer in the NBA with Kevin Durant, 28.4 points per game, leading the league. You want to be an elite player, act like it. Tyson Chandler working hard under the boards. J.R. Smith misses a shot, misses a jumper. He taps it out, does Chandler. Anthony grabs it at the three-point line. There are no Thunder players around him. He had a clear pass to the basket. Clear pass. Settled for a three and missed it. That is a time where you have to attack. I know at some points, Melo's feeling it. He wants to take that three. But that's a time in a game against the Thunder, in a game that you don't necessarily need, but you're up by 11 and damn it, you want it. Take the rock to the hole. Challenge somebody. Get the old-fashioned three-point play. Get a bruise on your forearm. He had one guy to beat. I rewound it three times and watched it. There was one Thunder defender on his rear end. Chandler knocked him down. Collison was under the rim. And Chandler was already boxing him out. Collison gave himself up. He thought Anthony was just going to pull, and he did. He was right. But if Anthony makes that split decision and drives to the rim, he draws contact, and maybe he gets the shot to fall. That's where the Knicks are going to run into trouble, settling for too many three-pointers. And as that caller brought up on Mad Dog Radio before I went on to a tangent there, as I just remembered, three-pointers have been the Knicks' best friend this season at points. But in the end, they are fool's gold. Fool's gold. J.R. Smith, I like what he's doing lately. He's going to the hole. He's getting to the line. That's what these guys need to do. They need to complement their outside game with their inside game. And Smith, when he was taking shots down the stretch, I mean, it was like Reggie Christmas, my JV basketball coach in high school, all over again. I would put one up from the three-point line, and as soon as it left my hand, I'd hear Christmas go, "Get him out, get him out, get him out." And the shot would go down, and he would say, "Never mind, never mind, never mind." And the guy who was coming in for me would go back to the bench. J.R. Smith, he's chucking up those shots late. And you're like, you know, Melo's hot. He's got the hot hand. Why do you even have the ball? And then Smith, with the shot clock winding down, hits the two biggest shots of the game. You can't find another guy who fits into that mold of John Starks from back in the mid-90s on this Knicks team right now. A guy who could basically shoot you to a win or shoot you in the feet to a defeat. But boy, did he hit two big shots. I honest to God think, as my producer tells me I have 90 seconds left in this podcast, but I honest to God think that the New York Knicks have a shot to not only get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but to have sphincters all over Miami wound extremely tight. I do. The way they're playing right now, 60 seconds, huh? The way they're playing right now, I think it's going to be pretty tough to beat the New York Knicks. I never thought I'd say that this year, but I just did. I have 40 seconds left, so I'm just going to wrap it up here. Thanks for listening once again to the Off the Wall podcast. We will have Billy Sample joining us on Wednesday, former Ranger and Yankee. He's got a new movie coming out. And I got to give props to my boy, Joe Oriema, for helping us set that one up. And Joe will join me for that one on Wednesday. So look out for that. Tomorrow I'm going to try to get my buddy Jim Leyritz on the program. Talk a little Yankees baseball with him. But that's going to do it for us. 10 seconds left. Thanks for listening to the Off the Wall podcast. The Yankees, don't forget, coverage starting at 3:30 today on YES.